Hi, my name is Andreas Neumann. I'm the Chief Creative Officer of Jushi Holdings, and I'm excited to be with Professionally Cannabis today.
Hello, listener, and welcome back to the Professionally Cannabis podcast. Today, I am delighted to be joined by none other than Andreas Neumann, Chief Creative Director at Jushi. As a quite remarkable man in media, Dre has spent decades at the forefront of advertising, film, and photography, working with companies like HP, IBM, and Rolls-Royce, and celebrity figures such as Iggy Pop, Pele, and Johnny Depp. Now, as media honcho at Jushi, Dre has been dedicated to revolutionizing their retail footprint. With all this in mind, there's only one thing left to say. Dre, welcome to the Professionally Cannabis podcast.
Jonathan, good to meet you, and thank you for having me here. It's always exciting to talk to you, and I'm excited to get into the weeds.
So, Dre, as you'll know, our first and customary question on the pod is, what led you to the plant?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because my journey is a pretty long one. So it all started really, if I remember right, I was in Germany. Germany being probably over 30 years ago. So imagine Germany in the midst of definitely cannabis being absolutely illegal and demonized by everybody for years and years. So it was definitely something which was considered a drug. And so I think I was 18. I was hanging out with my motorbike friends. We had this little motorbike gang, and we were doing this and that up for no good. And I remember there was a little bit older guys who introduced me to the plant. We had a meeting there or something about God knows what, and they pulled out some joints in the end, and I said, okay, I'll try it. And I tried it, and obviously it was something which was first of all illegal, but as well it came from places you would know, from Morocco or from Algeria, and it was smuggled in cars and in the gasoline tanks of Ferraris and stuff like that. All those stories I heard. So it was obviously intriguing to try, because I was always up for I'm a rule breaker, not a law breaker, but a rule breaker. So I'm always, my whole career has been, okay, if there's a rule, I have to kind of challenge it and ask why and so on. So already then, so I tried it, and it was, obviously we didn't know what it was. It was not like, okay, like today you go to California, it wasn't like Creative Balance or Boost. It was just some weed. So I tried, I got really tired, and that was it for me. So I said, that's not for me, that stuff. It makes me too tired. I'm a very active person. If I would ever take that, I would get nothing done. So that was it for me for 30 years. So my whole career in advertising, movies, music, it was always around me, obviously, but I never tried it. It was not my thing. Mm-hmm. So I stuck with the occasional drink, and then really I stopped even drinking alcohol 16 or 17 years ago. So until I was actually, my career, I went through advertising, I went through the entertainment business, I went to digital, I went to Silicon Valley, and in the end as well, the user experience business, which was fascinating for me, was my last startup, was in user experience. So through all that stuff, I have never smoked anymore, ever a joint again. Imagine for over 30 years. So until I'm driving through Silicon Valley, and I was reminded by the environment there, and I was just on the way of shooting Les Claypool from the band Primus for Josh Homme's Desert Sessions, which won me a Grammy for Best Photography in 2020. Funny enough, which is hilarious, having the Grammy in midst of the pandemic, you cannot even go there. So, but I was reminded by the environment. It's like I need to find somebody, because I was looking for a partner. I saw this, went to an artist studio of my friend, and I saw this package on the table, and it was, and I asked him, what is that pack? It looks sexy, this black looked like a cigarette pack. And he said, well, that's my brand, Andreas. So what brand is it? Is it a cigarette? I don't know. It's like pre-rolled joints. Oh, that sounds interesting. So immediately I made the connection. I said, wow, we have to do something. If that's so developed and there's brands now, and I had no idea. And this is nearly 4 years ago, right? So I got intrigued and I was thinking, I was just working with the Queens of the Stone Age, the Queens of the Stone Age, right? So how could I have not the idea to start a pre-roll brand with that band? So that's what I was looking for. I was looking for partners. And driving through Silicon Valley, coming back to this, I was reminded, oh, wow, I knew this guy who always knows everyone. And I called him out of the car. And he was in Singapore. He never answers the phone. And then, funny enough, he came back within like 2 minutes. He never does, and said, you have to meet Jim Cacioppo and Eric Mauff, the founders of Jushi. They're just starting this company. They're East Coast focused, and they're starting retail in cannabis. I was like, oh, whatever that means. Okay, let's talk to them. If that guy recommends me, there must be something there. Mm-hmm. So that was really the beginning of a great story. Then I spoke to Eric Mauff and the one of the founders, and to Jim. I met Jim, and I was fascinated by how they started that company. They were just in the middle of starting up the company. They were not in public yet, and just try to find their way, define their business, how they approach it, because they kind of were the second, Jushi was the second wave, I would say, or the third wave of cannabis MSOs then. And we weren't even an MSO yet. So it was super good timing for me to join. I really found out very quickly that this is like, wow, I was always looking for the next big thing. For years, I was looking for like, what's the next exciting thing, you know? So when I join a business, normally I try to, and this is goes for films and goes for like any project I do, I try to kind of become it like a method actor. So when I joined Jushi, basically I restarted everything and restarted my view on everything. So I started to test the product, and I when the first night, I remember, like, I got a pre-roll from a friend, which was very strong, very highly recommended brand, amazing weed, they said. So this is the first time I'm meeting the plant again after 30 years. And I smoked it. And I used to have, the first great thing happened, I used to have this lower back pain for a long time, for years. And I'm not joking, I'm smoking the first joint after 30 years. And the next morning, the pain is gone. So that was... and the pain was gone for good. So
a cannabis product quite different from what was being smuggled in those Ferrari engines back in the day.
Exactly, but you didn't know then what it really was, right? I mean, like today in all the illicit markets, you're still facing that. You're facing that in Europe. You still have to buy from sources which are not controlled and not regulated like in the United States. With all that stuff, I had to learn how amazingly regulated the industry is, and how you really have that seed to sale discipline. Like, you basically, you know, when you go to a dispensary here, you really know where the plant comes from, where it was grown, etc. Of course, it cannot leave cross state lines, so you have to be sure that it's grown in the state, and it's very, very safe. But what I was smoking really was as well incredible. I mean, California, the first experience, the champagne of cannabis comes from here, right? So so that was my first experience. I lost my back pain. So okay, so committing to this, since that day, I've consumed every day, and that's mean it goes for 3.5 years all the way through. Not one day I was missing, even if when I was had COVID. So I tested, and for that reason, I tested all the products. I tested the edibles. I tested everything. I really think when you sell something, or when you become a part of like an organization which deals with certain products, you have to use them. You have to feel them. You have to know everything about them. Otherwise, you cannot really like create a vision or like an emotion or like in the future the brands for this genre. So I became it, and I really like enjoyed it. I do this with every project I do. Like when I do a movie about parachute jumping, then I have to jump out of the plane. Otherwise, I don't know how it feels, right? So you have to become it, I think. And I really evolved myself. And this is one of the most exciting projects I've had probably all my life. And that includes like...
And that is absolutely saying something, Dre.
Yeah, it is. I know it sounds funny because, like, you know, thinking of like shooting the last Foo Fighter record might have been a highlight in my rock and roll photography career, but it's something has been done before, right? That's like other photographers have shot the Foo Fighters, maybe not like me, but that's what every photographer thinks. But the cannabis industry has basically, every day you have the opportunity to do a world's first, right? And where do you have that? And I think still, you know, Jonathan, we're so early in the cannabis industry. I always say, like, you can compare it with real estate. You always, like, when you go somewhere and then people say, oh, you should have bought here 20 years ago. Oh, you should have bought here 10 years ago. The cannabis industry is the same. Everybody says, oh, you should have get, now it's too late to get into it. It's not too late. It's just getting started. It's even, it might even be too early, you know, for certain, in certain respect. I find, for example, that in branding and brands, which in California is really the only market where you have like already brands and some of them are relevant or have an emotional or lifestyle value, not a lot, but it's really like early days. And you can be, if you have the wrong strategy on brands, you can be definitely too early and you can fail miserably because it's just too early. People are buying because high THC and good price. That's at the moment the game. So you have to know that. And I think it's never too late. I mean, you could get into it in 4 years and still would be early, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had the similar conversation with a lot of people before, and I've said something similar that, you know, even if folks are moving into the industry in 2, 3, 5 years, they're still going to be, relatively speaking, early movers in this space. And that's without doubt.
100%. And this is so, it goes from every angle. I mean, like, I really encourage people as well to be part of this. Because where do you have the chance to really make a difference? And it's a big responsibility. This plant has done so good for me as well. Beside my back pain, I feel, and I think we've spoke about this before, I feel the effect is really as well. If you're very like a person who's like, who wants to achieve, is always restless, like I am, you know, I always like to do something new. I want to find some new stuff. And then you might be losing a little bit focus. You're dancing on too many parties, right? So I think the plant helps you to go into yourself and like think things through, like relax and focus. You know, focus. That's the funny part, because when I had my as I said, my first experience, it was just literally smoke it and then boom, indica couch. It was probably an indica, but we didn't even know what indica or anything it was then. Whatever they told you about it, just here's a joint, right? So if you, it's so sophisticated, there's such a sophistication in the plant and how you dose it, the microdosing, every delivery method is different, right? And there's incredible technology coming out in California in terms of there will be a revolution of vapes as well. You know, they're just starting with the basic version one of vaping. I mean, there will be there's already like some sophisticated devices who have a completely like really like real flower like really deliver like a real joint. The new life rosin, you know, different ways of processing the plant will change the game as well in that areas, you know, from edibles to tinctures, and it's all going to change, and it's going to be much faster delivery. Like, to normally you have to wait now with gummies. You take gummies, you have to wait an hour, then you don't know, okay, did it work, did it not work? Some people have a really high tolerance, right? They have to take like 3 times as much gummies as others, and then they still don't feel anything. Some people have half of the gummy and they go totally like, oh my God, I can't do anything anymore. I have to sit down. So it's a long journey, and there's so much technology coming and so much like sophistication in how you prepare the product. It's fascinating, you know, and we just released our first chocolate. I mean, like, how can you have so much fun at release having a chocolate brand, right? I mean, that's a dream of every little boy, right? the Willy Wonka.
I'm sure there's going to be lots of listeners very jealous of you right now. That must be a great brand to develop. And actually, you touched upon brand strategy earlier, and I would absolutely love to dive into that a little bit later. But first, I'd love us to have a little look at your role at Jushi itself. So we've understood a little bit of your journey. You had your joint. You've then had an amazing 30-year media career. You've then had another joint, which probably started the beginning of a new journey. Now, when you finally started working full-time at Jushi, you mentioned that you did a couple of projects, you were courting, you were doing the dance with each other, you've decided to work full-time with one another. What did the company look like at that point? And what were the sort of key parts of your role that you were tasked with? What was your role? What were your ambitions? And how were things, well, how did things sort of play out?
Yeah, so super interesting question. So when I joined Jushi, the company was basically, so it was founded by Jim Cacioppo, who is an extraordinary like manager of funds. He's a, he was very he's a big expert in distressed asset investment. Did it for years. A very successful investor. And when he invests, Jim Cacioppo, he always got really like deep into the companies, and he changed them around and he put his team on. So he had a huge experience in sort of what to buy, what not to buy, and when he bought something, he would make it better and then increase the value of the thing. So that was kind of what their background was. So when I joined, they were just in the mode. They raised the money they needed to make acquisitions. Not really sure. As the background of Jim and his team, he has a stellar team. So basically our M&A team, or the M&A team he assembled, is normally has to work for like 15 different clients. And now he basically took his best guys, putting it into Jushi, and they then only had one client, and that's Jushi. So they were looking for acquisitions, and the in their process and methods, there's a big part is the research, right? You do, and where you get into a business. Basically, imagine you're raising money, and now you're here, and now you're in America in the cannabis industry, and then you get started. What do I do? I have millions of dollars now. So They made some great decisions. So basically, they just, when I joined, acquired Beyond Hello in Pennsylvania, and that was a good. That was a great deal, you know, then at the time already, because they really researched where do we have to get into it, in which states are the most interesting for the future and for growth. And that was clearly the East Coast states, and Pennsylvania was the first one. And they bought Beyond Hello, and I just came in when store three was open. And when those stores opened, and this is the time as well in cannabis, there was no data. Basically, Jim or John went into the store, bought some weed, and left, and said hi and bye. And there was no data trace of them because of certain regulations. You couldn't do online pre-ordering. You couldn't do anything really, like in terms of like collecting the data of your customers. So this is exactly when I joined, and I was just fresh coming from another startup where I had a company who was exclusively dealing on the user experience of things, and that was as well our approach with, and this is my approach with every company I join now. The first thing is, what's the experience like of the different application? How can we improve them, and how can we take the friction out those applications? And the application case was really, we had retail stores. They obviously didn't have any online pre-order, any online application to it. So we were working out pretty quickly with my team that we need an online platform to, first of all, as well, not only take the orders online, but as well, like capture the data of our customers. And as you know, data is king today. And if I have a lot of data, I can learn from it. I can adjust. I'm actually not flying blind anymore. And I think, so this is what my team first did. And I remember in April 2020, we launched our online platform. And this online platform, like only was doing like three stores or something. I remember the first day, Jonathan, we made $30,000 online pre-orders, which I have never seen before that happen online without any promotion or any advertising. You could see, wow, people are really looking for that stuff. And this is only, I'm only talking Pennsylvania. So, and overnight we had data, we had user data, we knew what people were looking for. So this started basically our journey of like rolling out a very, very solid, like an easy to use online platform. And this was my first job in Jushi really. And we focused, this is like, he's like, okay, he's the creative guy, but my creative basically goes from, I'm responsible for all the digital platforms, specifically the e-commerce world of Jushi, all the brand creation, and then as well all our public relations with working very close with our investor relations team in order to really tell the tale and project out like Jushi's journey. To our shareholders and to new shareholders. So this is my responsibility basically at Jushi. But this online platform, coming back to it, went from and then of course being powered in powered by COVID in 2020, where everybody said, okay, we have to go online, we have to have as least touch points as possible when we pick up something at the store. So it really helped, funny enough, to power like the online in those states, the online traction in those states. And even today, all our East Coast states are like they some of the stores, they're 100% online. Some of them like 80%. Virginia, like I see 80 to 90% online orders only. You know, people like they decide 80% of people decide at home what they wanna buy actually in those states. And that's not in California, but in states like Pennsylvania, Virginia, Illinois, Massachusetts, that's what's happening. And that's so interesting how state by state this business can be different. But finishing your question, really, actually going a little bit too long, is so that is what I did first. So we came in, did online, and then the next thing was really rolling out our house brands, I call it. I don't want to really call them house brands because they're really independent brands in different dispensaries all over. They're not only in ours, but they're like kind of our private label, our brands. We launched 6 brands last year after the online platform was launched. The next focus was brands, and we launched all our brands from flower to different flower brands to edible brands to vape brands. So we have all that covered literally like in 2021. And now this year will be for me like really the year of brands as well, where we improve, makes things better, choose certain SKUs which really people fell in love with and focus on those ones.
Andre, you were talking about how you were building out and growing your team. Now, in this, in your endeavor to grow a, you know, fast-paced, effective, digital-focused team, what skill sets were you really looking for? What underpins a really high-powering digital media data marketing team for the modern cannabis industry?
Yeah, great question. I think for every industry. And this is what I learned, Jonathan. This was one of the biggest, in the second, it sounds funny, it's so nerdy actually. Second biggest moment in my career was really to understand how to build things methodically and with a process. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I used to do companies. I have an idea. I run with it. I try to put it together and make it happen. But most of the time, and this goes for most entrepreneurs, they follow their vision. They have to, obviously, they have to find a great team. They have to have the right strategy. And if that's not right, you go out of timing, and you basically, you cannot be successful if you don't accidentally have the right timing. And it happens to lots of people. They just have a hit, like a music hit. So if you want to have a sure hit, I think, and that's what I learned in the user experience business, in the UX and CX business, which I was part of a very successful agency called IDEON in Silicon Valley. That opened my eyes. So coming to your question, you have to not just hire or like build like a team of builders. You have to really have the people who think it through, look in the future, come back to the present, and then build the journey like in a process. And this is really goes with, it starts with the research. Research, research, research. It's like Jim and his M&A team. You have to do the research. You have to learn everything about it, get all the data in, and then you have to find people who create the architectural plan of what you want to do. And then you test that plan. You like show it to consumers, test it against everything you could possibly test it, and then you build it, and not just build it before you've planned it out, which you don't build a house before you have a good architect. You can do that, but that house will, you know how this will look. It will look like a Frankenstein, and your daughter's bedroom will, she will have to walk through your bedroom to get to her bedroom and stuff. So that's if you work directly with the builder, right?
Sounds like you've worked with a bad architect before.
And yeah, well, with no, in software development, Jonathan, I've worked with no architect at some point. I had no idea in the beginning. Like this is like 15 years ago, Silicon Valley, when I had my first startup there. I had no idea how to build something, because I'm a creative person. I have a good new idea every day, and the developers, they say yes to everything. So in the end, you build some really Frankenstein which can do anything you wanted, even make the coffee, but you cannot use it because it's too complicated. So to really creating, you have to identify the top frictions your customers, your consumers have, and then you have to work to solve those problems for them. And if you do that in a way, it's really it solves as simple as possible their problem, then you have something. And this is what we did with our sites. You know, when you go to our sites, you're really still improving it, Jonathan. It's like you have to be, I knew from data, when you look at the data tree, you see people really want to get to the menu and order. They don't want, and it sounds like, I'm sorry to say, they don't want to learn about the medical aspect, all that stuff we have on our website, of course, or learn about it, or like a blog and thing, read about strains. They don't, look, I can see they want straight to go to the menu and order something. So this is how we build our site. If you go to our site today, you see like you only have two clicks, you're like in your local dispensary and you can order. So you have to reduce this as much as you can. Then you have like a successful online business, right? Like or any successful business, actually. If you don't do that, you just average and like it's not going to work out. So my advice is really to plan, to research, plan, work with futurists. Sounds abstract. We have a futurist in Jushi on staff. Imagine. Oh, so wow. A futurist who does nothing else than predicting what's going to happen in this radically ever changing cannabis industry, right? And he comes from University of Pasadena Arts, and he's like Julian Scarf. He's like a published author. He does nothing else for us than where's retail going? Where are the brands going? Where's consumption going? How is delivery methods working out? People are switching to edibles. Are they not? I'm talking 5 years from now, right? So he is modeling that out for us, and we're already preparing for that moment, right? So it's like it's not accidentally be having great hits with our stuff, because we at least think we know what's going to happen.
So Dre, you've mentioned before that when you've done analysis of your retail consumers, in addition to general consumers in the cannabis space, often people are basing their purchasing decisions still on price and strength of THC. It sounds like a great position to be in for a cannabis retailer, but perhaps given these factors, harder to achieve long-term success as a cannabis brand. With that in mind, what do you think are the critical success factors in the modern cannabis market for creating or sustaining a brand that will, well, not just thrive in the short term, but will still be around in 5 years' time, 10 years' time? What sort of dollar spend is really going to be most beneficial for making that brand memorable and making sure that they have a seat at the table for many years to come? And where do you see brands perhaps spending in a way that most likely won't significantly help them in the long term?
Yeah, that's a great question. Of course, this question we're asking ourselves every day, and there's a bunch of factors, I think. So look at the product first. There's no really consistency to be achieved in yet. So if you buy some flower in California of a famous brand, it's likely to be something else the next time. It's either going to be another strain, or you don't find the strain you just had. The plant grows, it's always something else, right? The consistency is very, very hard to achieve in this genre, right? So it's like strawberries. I mean, it depends how much sun there was, and it's good strawberries, more a little bit sweet, a little bit less sweet. Depends if you like it. So it's very hard. So first, the industry has to figure out, I think, how to create real good, consistent, high quality product which people can go back to. That's why, for example, in distillate, it's a little bit easier, because in distillate, like, you can just achieve the same thing again and again and again if you just buy the right THC levels and kind of make it kind of trying to really have the same every time, or it's the same kind of style of product every time. It's not easy. Gummy is the same. I mean, you can maybe have more consistency there, but in flower itself, very challenging. So looking at California, you have very sophisticated brands. Everybody is doing, I just was telling you earlier when we spoke, and next to me, they're sitting a glass hand grenade with a pull ring on it, and it's called Napalm. and there's a pre-roll in there. This is probably like takes out an elephant. It's for 10 people a party. It's a party gag. This thing is like costs $150. In the dispensary. We sell it in our Santa Barbara dispensary, for example. Not many people will buy this. It's just a joke, but the thing, it's fun, of course, and I talk about it now, so because it's intriguing packaging. But this is kind of, I'm going to buy this probably once, and then I experience it, and do I go back to it? Maybe, who knows? And there's so many sophisticated concepts in California, and the greatest packaging, and they try to find different names for sativa, and like calm and creative and this and that, and there's the whole pre-roll lines based on like different effects, and you can buy them. The thing is, people, what I see in the dispensaries, they always want something new. This is today, they always want something new. So they come in already asking what's new. So because they want a new experience, because they know that they're not going to get the same thing from a brand they bought last time. And they really look at brands only, this is based on research again, Jonathan. They look at brands at the moment, like just to remind them what happened last time. And then they went, oh, I had this last time. That's maybe, oh, I'm going to take that again. But have an emotional attachment to the brand. This is, I'm in love with this brand, like an iPhone. I'm boring, but like an iPhone, right? The iPhone could be not as good as other products, but there's still an iPhone. So you have to have an iPhone. Mm-hmm. So they overcome it. They kind of made people love the product. So that doesn't happen yet in cannabis, very rarely. So building brands now is very challenging. I would, if I could give some advice, I would wait. If you don't have any stores, wait. Just take your time. Find the right partner. Find the right grower. Find the right really good partner to make consistent product. And then try to just focus on one niche of the industry. And you can research what's the most beneficial or financially beneficial, because you can research that and then focus on that and make it the best it can be. And I think making it the best thing can be is, I think, it to in terms of product is the only thing you can do at the moment. And it's not about like how it's packaged. It's more like what's in it, specifically in flower. Flower is like compared with the strawberries. You go to Whole Foods, you're not gonna look for the nicest packaged strawberries. You look for the strawberries which come from like a nice farm locally, or like there's a story attached with like it's made with this beautiful border from Colorado or like whatever. There's a story to it, and that's why you buy the good looking strawberries. You might go buy them again. They have a certain name. You buy them, but as soon as you go into processed like a jam, then you can do brands, right? Or like comparing with cannabis, gummies, pre-rolls, vapes. There you can have a bigger chance to make an impact with some brands, because people would remember the effect, and the effect is proven to be, you can make it more consistent, those products. So flower itself is just, you should really sell it. I think in some mason jars, a guy with a shuffle gives you, what do you want? Some sativa, you put it in here, boom, like there's a nice strain here, put it in, boom, this is how you should sell flower, in my opinion. But there's so much fancy, like people wasting, I think, a lot of their energy in like making the most fanciest packaging, and they're not delivering good weed. Specifically dangerous as well for celebrity brands, right? If you go by certain, I think Bob Marley, for example, has hurt themselves. They started very early years ago. They launched Bob Marley's brand, and what a legend, right? And the quality wasn't quite right, I think. And that got them bad press, and it's now very hard to restart that again, by even with such a legend, right? So you have to be careful. Quality is everything. I think the product is everything. Focus on the product and the consistency of the product, and then think about the packaging and all that stuff, which you have to do. You cannot advertise it anyway. And if you start today in California, I mean, it's a battle. You know, flower prices are down. It's a battle in the store. So we have like brands lining up wanting to get on the shelves, right? But they do literally anything to get on the shelf. Do they make any money? Not yet. So, because they cannot, because they're just giving it away, or having it to give away too cheap because of the competition. That's California.
Dre, just before, you mentioned about celebrity partnerships, and as someone who themselves has a lot of experience working with celebrity and celebrity partners pre-cannabis work, and now working in the cannabis industry, which has seen a plethora of celebrity partnerships, some of which have been a real hit, others which have been less successful. What do you believe the hallmarks are to a successful celebrity brand partnership? What's hot and what's not?
Very, very good question, Jonathan. That's probably everybody's asking themselves these days, because we're in the days of where we kind of starting to get there. I'll give you a little bit of background on my end. So I've been working a lot, as you mentioned. So I've been not only in my entertainment business career with my rock bands and the Foo Fighters and Arctic Monkeys and Queens of the Stone Age, I've been working with a lot of celebrity. I know a lot of people. Obviously, I live in Hollywood, California. It's hard not to meet everybody there if you're in this. So if you get started in certain circles. So knowing all that, and being, when I was focused in my advertising career in Saatchi and in Gray, those big agencies, I was doing a lot of celebrity. I was focusing specifically on fragrance commercials and with celebrities. And I've done a lot of research then on which celebrity is good for what, and so on. And we did a lot of commercials, and we did a lot of successful brands in like even like Priscilla Presley. Imagine, like we did a perfume. So perfume as well is like an interesting thing, because it's pure emotion. You bet you sell something in a bottle, which you have to attach the emotion to it, right? So you have to find somebody who and tap into their world and then use that world to reflect on the brand. And this is why people buy it. Of course, the product has to be good, but it's something you put on you, and like you smell like a, if it smells good, I mean, then you buy into the whole emotional values of the celebrity. So applying this to cannabis, we are a little bit early, I think. It's always like these days, of course, then when I've done that, there was no much social media, you know, it was basically TV commercial, cinema commercial and stuff. So it was a little bit different times. Today, you're like, everything is celebrity. Celebrity. So it's like with their social media accounts, they can promote stuff. But you know what's important? The importance is really the so now becoming to cannabis. This product is unmatched. The experience of cannabis is always different, as we know. It depends who you're with, where you are. Am I sitting in the desert under the stars, or am I sitting in like my room alone in a city, or am I with friends, or am I with a new friend? Mm-hmm. I'm smoking this. So it's always different. What have I eaten before? Am I drinking alcohol? Am I not drinking alcohol? What's my state overall? You know, it's really not as easy as like, okay, let's attach a famous person to this very sophisticated plant and effect of it, and then think it's gonna sell because of that. So that's why it's you have to be extremely careful to choose a, call it like, famous person, celebrity, to be your promotion engine for your product. I think the first thing what you have to do in this business, and that's where we are now, we have to reach consistency in the product, which is, you know, it's not there. Some companies are better than others, but the consistency of the product is key. And that's very challenging, as you know, with this product cannot cross state lines, and it's like through the compliance issues we have, it's challenging, you know. And obviously in the indoor grows, you have to have the right strains, and you have to study those strains, you have to make sure they're consistent, how they grow, you have to make sure you grow them consistent, all that stuff. I mean, it's highly complex to get there. So what I have to say, how we approach it, so our leadership with Jim Cacioppo, our CEO, he's an incredible businessman. He has turned around humongous companies. He knows how to put together the right teams. And there's a time like this, like, and strategically, you have to think, okay, what's our strategy? So we're working at the moment really on the consistency of our product. We're working on having the best gummies. We're having the best edibles, the best tinctures, all based on, as well, on research. What we make is based on like what the people are looking for, right? And what's the best for the people. So first we have to sort all that out. Then we can, and we will start to test now, we call it limited drops, in partnership with bands, with celebrities, with whoever we choose is the right thing for a certain genre, and we will test that. But we're not ready, I think, to go out and say, okay, here's Kim Kardashian, and now we do a weed brand with her, and it's going to sell great because she's going to post it on her Instagram. I think that's not going to work, and that's not working for the cannabis consumer these days. The consumer is still in the beginning of the business. You know, I think it's too early, a little bit. You have to really know, first, as I said, do what I just said. So just work on the product, work on consistency, work delivering great stuff to your patients, in our case, patients and customers, and then starting to slowly introduce really relevant people to partner with more than just putting their name on it. It has to be a real partnership. You know, it has to be somebody who has some real credibility, not like necessarily a Snoop Dogg who's smoking a lot and like, okay, you should have a weed brand. It's more like, I think it's more people who are deeper and more uncommercially committed to the plant, and more like, you know, like you have to find the right, it doesn't have to be the biggest celebrity in the world, but it has to be the right one. You know, it's really important to have the right strategy on that. And I think it's a little bit too early, but there have been obviously, like, everybody tries it, like Mike Tyson has its own world. I mean, he's for example, he's a real guy. You know, he stands for the plant. He does his grow, and this is like super authentic, mm-hmm. and he just does it. You know, he's not necessarily thinking, okay, I want to make the biggest business out of it. He is a cannabis fan. He has his own grows. He has his own brand. So that makes sense. And he's it. You know, I like that, for example. What I don't like is just if we would go out and do a partnership and then just put the name on it and then think we can sell it for $15 more. And that works maybe like for one purchase, but then boom, next time, okay. Cannabis is really at the moment at the place where people want high THC, low price, you know, great quality. If I put the name of somebody on it and I have to pay $15 more, that works one time with the nice packaging and everything. And then maybe next time I just buy something else and put it in that packaging. Because it's no one beside, if somebody like Mike really goes to his plants, right? And he's looking, you can see that he's in it. That's what you have to do, I think. That's how you have to approach this today. And we're not there yet, but we're looking, you know. We're talking to a lot of people, and we will make a move in the right time, I think, when it's right.
Well, Dre, as ever, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Unfortunately, the clock has beaten us. I want to say thank you so, so much for joining us on Professionally Cannabis.
Jonathan, I mean, thank you so much for having me. I know... I love talking, and thanks for letting me talk so much. You were such a good listener, and I have always have a lot of fun with you. And it's actually inspiring because you have to think about things again and really like focus on things which you sometimes in all day long you cannot focus on so much. So thank you very much for having me.